friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
The show is back. Nick Wilson, Jonathan Peterlin. We are Afternoon Drive. It is a delectable Thursday in the city of Cleveland. We've got plenty to get to. That open, courtesy of Mac Robinson on the board. Yes. We've got Jake Murren doing some producing, helping out with YouTube as well. As always, you guys can check us out on the 92.3 The Fan YouTube channel. Super Chat, what up? Also, want to say a big thanks to Matt Corelli, who's doing the 2020s today. I believe Meredith will be in doing some 2020s for us today as well. A loaded show, but across from me, as always, my main man. I was trying to think of something after that, and I just ran out of steam. Hi, JP. How you doing?
Hello. How are you today?
Pretty good.
Good. Yeah. That's good to hear.
Yeah, we're having that day where when somebody says, how are you doing? I say, really good. And
then
I think people are like, I've aspired to this for so long. I think I've reached Jeff Phelps' level of contentment.
Oh, good. That's good to hear. Can I tell you what's been bothering me so far today?
Yes.
I have gotten to a spot where I've been back now 4 days, coming off the paternity leave where I was gone for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't seen me at this point, I haven't come up with enough angles to tell people that Elisa's doing great. The baby's doing great. Everyone's doing great. And thank you for asking. I need to come up with like a new spin or something, because I feel like I've repeated that story 12 million times.
Could you just make something up?
Off the air.
Or get really specific. Like, I'll be honest with you, hadn't made a deuce today.
Well, I've noticed.
I've started
like almost changing the story as it goes, just to see people's reactions to see if they're different.
Mm-hmm.
In the front, I'm like, well, this baby's much better than Charlotte was. Like, this, I'm sleeping a lot more than I usually am. Like, this. Now I'm like, oh, absolute hell.
Yeah, the updates.
Absolute hell.
The updates,
just to see what
like
people will say.
The first 3 months of life, unless it's a bad update, it's like, still really tall.
Yeah, like the baby does nothing.
Yeah.
The baby's not really changing here.
Yeah.
Like, she's doing great.
Now,
once you get post
6 months, then we're more tummy time. She's scooching around a lot, or ready to stand. Or
even those are very uninteresting updates,
yes,
though.
No.
Picture, very uninteresting updates.
No, but they'll seem like huge updates compared to...
Is that what that is?
Still sleeping. Still a baby.
Well, now I know what's going to happen, though. If I haven't seen you yet, and then you don't say congratulations, then I'm going to turn around and be like, where's my congratulations?
Oh, wait, I have to offer you a congratulations every day?
Not you.
Oh, okay.
No. People I haven't seen yet. Because as you trickle in.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
I saw salespeople today that I haven't yet seen. And so I'm redoing the conversations all week long. And it's nice that people are saying congratulations, but it's also like, I need to come up with better material here.
Mm, I think it's interesting that so much of our job is rehashing the same narratives we've talked about because of the Cleveland Browns being bad at football.
Yeah.
And but we're trying to extrapolate it to your personal life is just... It is a little extra work.
Maybe
that's
where I draw the line. I can give you the same Joe Flacco take 27 times, but when you ask me about my kid, I got to get you something else.
Got to get something new?
It's got to be fresh.
Pretty sure she grew a quarter inch.
Well, I'm not that person. We have people at this station that will test material out on other people, and then they'll take it to everyone else.
Are you looking right at me while saying that?
No, actually, I looked away, intentionally looked away, because I was thinking about somebody else that wasn't you.
Okay. No, I totally will. Yeah.
If the shoe fits, though.
100%.
I'm not that guy. Like, if I make a... And there are people this way. They'll go to a party, for instance, and then they'll make a joke, an observation that hits.
Yep.
That's their joke for the night.
Yep. 100%.
That's the one they got. That's the one they say to everybody.
Yeah. You
got to
crowdsource it, baby.
I'm not that guy. I want to constantly be like, all right, that one landed. Nice. On to the next one.
No,
Get me something else.
No.
Amuse myself.
I'm Jerry Seinfeld. I'm going to be saying, what's the deal for the next 35 years?
Is that right?
So, by the way, what's the deal with the Cleveland Browns? Which we can say damn near every day this week. Greg Newsom and a 6th rounder sent to Jacksonville for Tyson Campbell and a 7th rounder. So I will say again, what's the deal with where the Cleveland Browns are?
Yeah, so Tyson Campbell, his PFF grade, it might as well just be a trash can on fire. He's not good right now. And I think from Jacksonville's perspective, they got a new GM in there in Gladstone. I think he didn't pay him a lot of money. Jacksonville 2 years ago paid him a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they want to get rid of him. And Greg Newsom's an upgrade for them. But for the Browns, this is not the type of move you make if you're trying to win games this year.
Okay, expand on that, because I think some people have said that because Tyson Campbell can come in and be your other starting cornerback,
he's not good at football. Greg Newsom was good at football right now.
All right, but Tyson was good at football once.
2 years ago, yeah, before he was injured. You know who he is when you talk to, like, Jacksonville fans? Yeah, like Andrew Sendejo, we just used to complain about number 23 often, and, like, the only time if you brought him up, it would just be just a negative way. Uh-huh. That's who this guy is for them.
All right, the only thing I'll say is...
They can't stand this player.
Only thing I'll say is Andrew Sendejo was a undrafted free agent.
He's a well-paid version of Andrew Sendejo.
And more physically talented, even if the football isn't good. I understand the point you're making.
That when the fan base thinks about that player, they shudder. Mm-hmm. That's who we just got.
So from Jacksonville's side, they're selling it as Greg Newsom is a better fit for their scheme because of what they asked the cornerback to do. The Browns, I think, probably will sell the fact that Tyson Campbell might be a better man corner than he is running any of the other kind of coverages, right?
Which is great because, you know, Schwartz doesn't really do the whole man coverage thing as often as people think that he does.
I mean, he thought about it, though, and I think that's important.
Yeah, think about who's covering Justin Jefferson on Sunday a large portion of the day.
Maybe that's the point, is maybe we won't be doing that again. JK, LOL.
JK, LOL. But, it's Schwartz. It's what he does.
But let's be clear about this. This was about having a corner who could start on the Browns roster opposite of Denzel Ward because they're... With MJ Emerson, even if he comes back next year, you're going to have to sign him to a contract or not. Greg was a free agent, and you saved roughly $8.5 million. And that, to me, is where it's not about this year. That, to me, like Joe Flacco, you could say Joe Flacco wasn't about winning, didn't have anything to do with winning and losing this year, even though Joe is a better fail-safe than Bailey Zappe is. Okay, mm-hmm. I'd rather be one play away from Joe Flacco starting for you again than one play away from Bailey Zappe if that's how Kevin's going to draw it up. But I can understand that a lot of people didn't think Joe was ever going to see the field again for them this year. With Greg Newsom, I think after the Minnesota game, it's tough to say this because he was bad in the second half.
Second half, but I think people here at the station were tweeting about how good he was in the first half.
That was me.
I could not remember who that was.
It was actually two plays. It was the first play where he defended Justin Jefferson very cleanly, and the second play, he was the one making the tackle when the peanut punch came out and got the fumble.
And then the second half happened.
Then the third play happened. It didn't even wait three plays.
Okay.
But, I think when you're talking about saving money and trying to build out a roster, like the consideration of Tyson Campbell can play his way into the 2026 Browns, okay. So you got worse at the cornerback position to save $8 million. That's not a move that a team trying to win makes. I don't know it's tanking, but I know it's not doing everything you can to win.
I wouldn't call it tanking, but if I asked you if the Browns got better with this trade for this season, that answer is it's not even arguable. The answer is just a clear-cut no, and it's fine. I'm not going to beat them up for it. I'm focused on 2026. I'm worried about 2027 and I like them thinking about the future. It's just then you have to be honest about it, and then we have to figure out how far this goes.
So I think it's if the question is, in season, if the Browns decided to pull the guardrails off and tank, today the answer is no. That can change very quickly. This is a slippery slope from here, because remember, tanking is, are you playing to be competitive, but you would prefer not to win? And are you actively doing things that makes the head coach's job tougher to win, right?
This is one of those things.
That's different than tanking in the offseason, which is just you're going to make this roster stink as much as you can, right?
I know, but we've gone a really short time from when people like our buddy Coach Riz, who's on Tuesday, was saying, 8 to 9 wins, I think, mm-hmm. was your burger bet.
Yeah.
Ken Carmen
sure was.
Talked to Bernie Kosar, and then also, I think, 75 other Browns quarterbacks. And
Brian Sipe moved it up to
8 wins.
Seance with Otto Graham. There was a lot of quarterback talk there.
I think it was John Greco in the 9 to 10 win category somewhere around there. 5 weeks later, we are now closer to the spot of what are you drinking if you think they're going to win 8, 9, 10 games, because now Dylan Gabriel's already starting games. You're making trades.
Another sure sign you're not trying to win rookie quarterback that wasn't
exactly,
a first round pick.
Exactly the point. And you're making trades that get you worse for this season and this season alone, potentially. It's wild to me how quick this has happened, but maybe we should have seen that part coming. Maybe part of us did.
Two-parter. I'm not, for those on YouTube, I'm not smirking because the Browns could be on their way to tanking. I'm smirking because I've got three burger bets that look like locks right
People
now.
People are so dumb.
I mean,
why do they keep making burger bets with you?
Because I entice them.
You're undefeated.
I'm like a snake charmer.
You bait them is what you do.
I would prefer you get them in a snake charmer.
What I would call a compromising situation.
Okay.
Where they have to try to defend their
Woodward
take.
I'm not Woodward or Bernstein here.
But you're working like them. They have to try to defend their take in such a way that then you, knowing if you were Vegas, you're just robbing from them is all you're doing. You get them in a spot where you know you're going to win that bet, and then obviously they take it because they can't back down because they felt like they made a big grand take.
I simply am asking them to stand up to where the words are.
I'm not mad at the hustle.
And they are. And I'm proud of them for making those burger bets and keeping me fed through possibly the end of the year. Now, that being said, to the second thing you said, like, it is harder to win now. Like, this is, I think both trades can be disruptive in a week. You're already coming off the London game, in the London trip, mm-hmm. and going up against a team that I think right now is healthier. And because they're healthier, they might be a titch better than Minnesota. I think by the end of the year, Minnesota will be a better team.
Well, yeah,
but I think Pittsburgh right now is a slight bit better. You just gave them, I think, another ace in the hole. You made Kevin Stefanski's job a little bit tougher this week with these two trades.
Well, I mean, for sure, the Steelers are better than the Vikings right now because the Vikings weren't playing J.J. McCarthy. They were playing Carson Wentz. Like, there's a difference there. There has to be a difference between Aaron Rodgers. My goodness, did you hear Stefanski yesterday? Stefanski,
best thrower ever or something like that?
Best passing quarterback in NFL history? Best thrower of the football in NFL history?
In fairness, he's watched Deshaun Watson, Jacoby Brissett, DTR.
Also in fairness.
And Joe Flacco throw the ball.
Also in fairness, I listened to Tomlin Tuesdays and heard him talk about Dylan Gabriel as if he was Joe Montana.
And he just read off his Wikipedia. There was a big difference between what the two head coaches said.
I do feel like a lot of the press conferences I've heard have been very complimentary. Although Aaron Rodgers kind of did take a shot, or at least a perceived shot, in my opinion, with Jim Schwartz. I don't know if you caught that at all.
Because Detroit, Green Bay. Okay, now I get it.
No, not even that. It was the idea that he was like, yeah, you know, Jim. He'll stick 8 men in the box, but that's not really what he's playing at all. And it's easy to beat. You can get after it. It's paraphrasing. Didn't say easy to beat the way that I just said it, but that was what he was inferring.
Now I want to hear the audio. 216-474-0092.
It was that juicy. I would have brought it to you earlier. Don't worry.
That's fair. Joe Varden of The Athletic joining us at 2:40 today. Lindsey Rhodes of Sumer Sports at 3:00. We'll talk about the Browns trades there. What do you make of them? Were you surprised? Are the Steelers actually that good? We got quick hits coming up at 3:40. We got Pete Futek at 4:20. The quarterback Deadpool. It's 6:20 ahead of our guy Cash Lovett, who joins us every Thursday at 6:30. We'll get his picks for the week as well. But 216-474-0092. At Nick Wilson says, at Jay Peterlin on social media. Social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. We'll start with the obvious, which is, what do the trades this week signal to you? Is this a fire sale? Are we tanking? Are we just really, really enjoying pick swapping like this is Love Island and we're just trading off significant others? And you do have to ask the question, how far is this thing going to go? We'll answer that in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
The Newsom trade is a little bizarre to me. I mean, he's really a really good player. I mean, obviously losing Emerson in training camp really hurt. But defensively, they played very, very well. And Newsom's a part of that. And I thought he was playing well. I don't really totally understand the trade. Tyson Campbell is a good player. He's a big corner. You know, they're having a lot of success taking the ball away in Jacksonville. Maybe it's just something that both teams feel like benefits their team. And I don't think that's a distraction. But, you know, I mean, it's playing for Jim Schwartz's defense is, I would say, is fairly complex. I don't know how quickly he can be up to speed right now.
Brian Baldinger on with the morning show. Pretty explosive morning with Baldy, with the morning boys. Said a lot of stuff we're going to react to today. I actually disagree. I don't think it's a bizarre trade if you kind of know where the Browns are and where they're going to go. Greg Newsom, although they could have re-signed him, I think at some point you have to decide between re-signing him and MJ Emerson. I think we know which way they'd go.
Well, and now that you see the price is going to be north of $20 million a year for Greg Newsom.
Yeah.
Come on, that's not happening.
And I think Tyson Campbell is at the very least a player who you can evaluate over the final parts of the season and figure out what's happening. And while in doing so, you're going to save $8 million. Like, I don't think the financial component of this is the Browns try and figure out the whole salary cap going forward. I don't think that can be undersold. To me, this is a salary dump.
Well, but there's also
a player they kind of like.
Well, there's also really high upside if they can get Campbell turned around. And again, if he stays healthy and everything is another component to it. But if Schwartz feels like he can do something with him and put him in more man coverage, and which I doubt they'll do, but like try there with him. Okay, now we're starting to cook here. Also with the idea that Jacksonville's paying so much of that money to begin with anyway. It's about $1.5 million a year as a flyer for a guy that got a $75 million contract.
What's funny about it is Campbell at his best is way better than Greg Newsom at his best.
Yeah.
Respect to Greg Newsom, you were here 4.5 years. That means something to someone. Greg's highs were never really that high. Even though he was okay on the outside, like... I think he had a couple nice games this year, and I think people really took it too far with the praise on Greg Newsom.
Well, and that might be where the Browns are sitting too. Like, wait, and so everyone's buying the Greg Newsom stock right now. Maybe we got to sell while it's high. Maybe we got to sell while we can. And it seems like Jacksonville's that guy.
Yeah, and again, you saved $8 million. But why I call it a salary dump is they get the better pick. When you're getting the seventh rounder and they're getting the sixth rounder in a pick swap. That's telling you that you had to adjust the value for some reason. Yes, some of that is Greg Newsom's going to be a free agent at the end of this year. And some of it's also that not only did Jacksonville take on the Newsom money, they also ate the salary, the signing bonus of Tyson Campbell, which again cleared you about $8 million in cap this year.
Let me ask you this. Do you feel like after the trade involving these two teams at the draft, if all of a sudden, and James Gladstone's the youngest GM in all of the NFL, right? And that's only surpassed by the idea that Andrew Berry was the youngest GM hired when he was hired by the Browns. But I wonder if after the two teams dealt with each other in the draft, I wonder if, do you think Andrew Berry just thinks that he can just pick on Jacksonville at this point?
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
I don't know. But I do think
you see
he knows.
What I'm saying?
I do know. I do think he knows that James Gladstone is super willing to do what
very aggressive.
I don't want to say whatever you want.
And Gladstone's already trying to win not only these press conferences, but like you already saw him. He's already taken victory laps in Jacksonville today about how much better the team is with Greg Newsom and all these other comments and everything. Like I almost wonder if this is Andrew Berry. You know, this happens in baseball. I love this in baseball. There's certain teams that are very analytically driven, and they just pick on. And they're now every front office has analytics guys, and so it's tightened up a little bit. But about a decade, 15 years ago, you'd call up teams that just had those old school baseball guys that played with their hunch and their gut, and you just take them to the cleaners in these type of deals. And I wonder if that trade for the draft and the draft opened his eyes to like Jacksonville's someone I want to keep doing business with, because I think I fleeced him there, and I wonder if I can get him again.
By the way, the answer now in baseball is Jerry DePoto or AJ Preller. You'd really like to get in with it. By
it's
the way,
really close,
smart
though.
Analytics guys, but those are the guys you can really
it's
rip
really
off.
It's really close. Like 15 years ago, it was like half the league was just a bunch of just basically old baseball guys that didn't really know what was going on versus all these analytically driven guys. And you could just see them all just feast over on those guys.
Now, I think the fair question is, how far does this go? I don't think these two trades this week constitute tanking. I don't. But if Njoku's the next guy, that's a guy, you've got a bad offense. That's a guy that has a place on this team this year and might be your best receiver at the moment, which is wild to say at this point, but it is true. If you trade him or if you trade any of your interior linemen, but certainly Wyatt Teller, like those are the guys that if you make a move, even if you get great value, you cannot tell people you're not tanking because you are removing the guardrails, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
How far does this go then?
I don't think there's anybody untouchable.
That's kind of where I'm sitting right now. Well, there are untouchables with like rookie class and stuff like that.
Yeah, but like in terms of like the guys
that are in their last year or second to last year.
Yeah, yeah. Or honestly, like we'll play the Nick Costos audio right now because he was on Baskin and Phelps and he threw an interesting name out there.
I think 4 or 6 weeks from now, we are going to be talking about Isaiah Bond as being the number one receiver on this team. I actually see no reason why they would keep Jerry Jeudy on the team. I think this is going to be like a fire sale come trade deadline time. And Njoku could be on the way out. I'm not reporting anything, just saying, like, Harold Fannin's been really good. You save money if Njoku is on the way out. And I think they want to open up space for Bond and maybe for Jamari Thrash. So I wouldn't be shocked if Judy's not on the team post-trade deadline.
I would be shocked if Jerry Jeudy was not on the team.
I would also be shocked. But like, I think what the narrative driven out of that clip, though, is the idea that basically anybody's on the table.
I think the thing with Jeudy is, and maybe this is like Newsom, but as a wide receiver, I'm sure that there are fans who would drive Jerry to the airport themselves. Mm-hmm. My thing is, again, the offense isn't that good with Jerry on it. And I do think, like, Jerry has had, there should be a 30 for 30 on the quarterbacks that have thrown to him. He's never had a good quarterback.
Yeah.
He's never played with a good quarterback. I mean, like, by the way, not even a functional quarterback. The best he had was Jameis Winston for like 7 weeks last year.
I'm gonna say maybe the version of Russell Wilson that we were like, is he washed? Is he not washed?
Where we didn't definitively know
that,
he was
that
washed.
One right in yeah. between there. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's what it is.
But like, I guess my thing is, like, while I'm not high on Jerry Jeudy and I'm pretty sick of watching him drop footballs, I don't know what you're actually going to get for him.
Well, and also you got to think about the quarterback that you'd be drafting in 2026 and the yes. environment he's got to enter as well.
Yeah.
Like, you can go out and get wide receivers, but you're already two wide receivers short as is.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you want to like pay $25 million a year to Jakobi Meyers this offseason, who I just wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
If we're being very fair, I wouldn't do that. 216-474-0092. How far should the trades go for the Browns? But Njoku, like, if you don't think you're going to commit money to him and there can be a savings this year, yeah, fourth rounder for David Njoku, let's have that conversation. Teller's the hardest one for me.
Well, especially because you have four guys in the offensive line that are up at the end of the season anyway.
Yeah.
So, well, like, you're going to need to spend money on the offensive line at the end of this season. I wonder if they just go for a completely new look, though.
Yeah, but that's hard. It is hard between if I knew Whipler could step in at center, and if I knew Zach Zinter could hold down one of the guard spots, and maybe we put right tackle for Dwan. Maybe, okay, well, that's three. You really only need two of five spots, but okay. Whipler's had injury issues.
Yeah,
Jones has had injury issues.
I wouldn't
issues.
Trust Zach Zinter to hold anything. Nonetheless, a spot on a football team.
I would trust him to hold a defensive lineman.
Zach Zinter?
Yeah, because he's not good at football.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to say. But, I think Wyatt might be the only one that if you traded him, I would be legitimately mad about, even if you got, like, a third-round pick for him. I think I would get legitimately pissed because he's 30.
Mm.
That's still young enough to pay. He's still got good football in front of him. And you have so many holes next year. I don't think you need to add one more on that offensive line.
Who are we mad about if they actually trade?
I'm probably not mad about Njoku.
I'm not mad. You know Njoku is one of my favorite players, has been for a long time. I think, was it yesterday or maybe a couple days ago? Would you call me an Njoku honk or something?
I don't know, but that sounds about right.
It was something that was yeah. like, yeah, and that's fair. That's very yeah. fair. I've been very much a fan of David Njoku for a while. But if they traded him, at this point, I'd just be happy for him. But good for you if they traded him to a good team.
Unless it was like Arizona, and then I'd feel sad for him again.
Well, yeah, they also have one of the best tight ends in the league. I think they'll be fine there.
Who's their OC? Our old quarterbacks coach. You're
going to do a Trey McBride, David Njoku combo?
The double tight end set. and I wouldn't be about Njoku. Maybe Malik Collins. Because I think Malik's got another year after this. I don't know what kind of trade offer you'd get for Malik. I would be kind of mad about that one.
He is somebody that his value is higher than it typically would be because he's playing really well right now.
I'll give you one. Alex Wright.
Okay.
I think when the time comes this offseason to re-sign Alex, he'll command a little money. I don't think he's going to command a lot of money. I think that's a piece on that defensive line that needs to be
here.
No,
but I'm talking
here.
Actually angry. I'm not talking like a piece you come in and you're like just scratching your head and you're like, I don't know how they got there. I'm talking like actually angry, like Isaiah Bond angry.
Oh, I don't think anything's going to make me as mad as Isaiah Bond.
That's the point.
I was mad. That was rage. That
was
next
level.
Isaiah Bond signing. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of the point, though, is that I feel like right now, the way I'm looking at these players, the way I'm looking at this roster, if they get any value out of any of these guys, they start to signal that this season is what this season is starting to trend to. I can't be mad about it.
But can I tell you the thing that does stand out? as we have the, is it a fire sale? Are they tanking?
That's the other thing. Why are we all so confused on this? Why is a fan base, are we not collectively on like understanding what's going on here?
Because it's quick. That they pulled the ripcord on the season really quickly.
It just snuck up on people?
No,
5 weeks in is just too early to abandon expectations or whatever else?
I think rightfully so. People said it's been an ungodly first 5 weeks. I mean, a comedy of errors.
Oh, heard from another person in the 8-9 win club, by the way. Coach Riz texted and said he's going to win the burger bet.
Yeah, sure you are, buddy. Yeah. I can already taste it. I just wonder where I'm going to go. However, I think people thought maybe you'll get to week 8 or week 9, and then you pull the ripcord on the season. You're not even waiting to get to Miami or the Titans game. You're not even waiting to get to the point of the season. Like, you're doing this before you got through the hardest part of the season. And I think that's where people are struggling. Not me, because I'm like, I mean, you're 1-4, you're probably 1-5.
You're 3-win Wilson. You had this coming from a mile away.
And I also have a burger bet, 3 of them, on this. But like,
I wonder, YouTube, the Super Chat must be getting mad about your burger bets at some point here.
Why?
You're enjoying the burger bets a little too much, I think.
I'm winning. How can you be mad?
Because the Browns are losing.
Okay, but it's not my fault.
You see how this is? It's real.
My success real and their downfall might be tied together.
It seems like it is.
Be happy for your boy. All right, Super Chat? I'm happy for the Super Chat. When the Super Chat gets good things, you can be happy for me too. But no, I mean, I think it's early. I think after the first 5 weeks of the season, 1 week into Dylan Gabriel, by the way, which we can talk about going from he's going to spark the team to now we have to find out what we have in Dylan Gabriel.
Which, by the way, becomes
we made
harder,
that switch in one damn week.
Well, it becomes harder if you start selling off all the pieces, too.
Yes, especially in Joku, especially Wyatt Teller.
I mean,
or
you
Posick
know, you
Conklin.
Can hear my Shedeur Sanders excuse from a mile away, can't you?
Would you be mad if they traded Shedeur?
Yes. I'd also be happy for him at this point because they don't really seem like they want to play him.
What if they got a fourth rounder for
they
him?
They seem like they don't want to play him.
What if they took a fifth rounder and swapped it for a fourth rounder?
Part of me would be happy about this. You realize I think Shedeur Sanders is going to be good.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not, no, I would not be happy about this.
Okay. I was just trying to say.
You can tell where my excuse is going to come from a mile away if he does, in fact, play
you just be happy
and
for
stinks
him?
Up the joint. No, if he plays and gets in at like week 14 or 15 and it's just a disaster.
Oh, they sabotaged him?
Not that they sabotaged him. They never gave him a chance.
Ah.
With this roster and the amount of pieces that they've sold off and everything in between, never gave him a chance.
I think we're going to get very close to the point of being able to say that about Dylan Gabriel.
Well, that's where we're not there yet, but I wondered if we're going to hit that spot where everyone looks around and it's like, I don't even know that we can fairly judge Dylan Gabriel at this point.
216-474-0092. Greg Newsom, he gone. Tyson Campbell, he here. Joe Flacco's in Cincinnati. He actually will start this weekend as well. How far should this go for the Browns? That's another thing. Speaking of the timing of this, trading Wyatt Teller today would feel, or Monday would feel different to me than if you waited till the exact trade deadline. Those 4 weeks do matter. I think it's 4 weeks. Those 4 weeks do matter because it's about giving these guys there at some point pulling the plug on this season this early is disrespectful to the guys that you sold something on. And then, I mean, you bait and switched it for that locker room. I don't know how that locker room's happy today if you think you got worse at corner and now you don't have the fallback of Joe Flacco at quarterback.
There was a reason why they sent Joel Bitonio out there to speak to the media today. Anytime they send out Joel, it's like, we know you're gonna do our bidding in a good way.
Not trying to steal Ken's bit, but Joel kind of is the Culligan, man.
He plays the part well.
He carries that water really well.
And he did so today, too. And if you're Joe, by the way, you got to be livid that this is how this is going down.
Yeah.
You came back. You returned. You tried to save them for another season, all with the grandiose idea that they were going to try to be competitive or do something close to competitive. Not this. Whatever this is, not this. And they're starting to sell off pieces?
Just wait until...
We're in week 6.
Just wait until they try and trade Joel. I think that will legitimately piss people off. Even though it's even though he's end of his career, maybe last 5 games, unless he asks for it.
Yeah, I don't think they could do that.
You put it beyond this organization?
I put nothing beyond this organization, but that is as ruthless as ruthless gets.
I put nothing beyond this organization.
He would just quit on the spot. He'd be like, I'm just done.
I don't think he would.
Unless they send him to Kansas City or somewhere. I'm just done.
I got to do right by Joel. 216-474-0092. Mm-hmm. How far are the trades going to go? How far should the trades go for the Cleveland Browns? Our buddy Joe Vardner, the Athletic, joins us and talks the latest for the Cavaliers. And of course, the insane live basketball idea. I'm okay.
friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
That was too heavy-handed. Joe joins in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I think the reason I stopped using tanking is it became a catch-all for any rebuild. And that's the thing that I was like, guys, that's not tanking. There is the off-season tanking where everybody gets on the same page and says, we're going to tear this thing down and we're going to be so bad that we're unwatchable. And everybody knows that. And then there's the thing that happens where you get in the season, you're not good, and you're like, well, let's not win too many games and screw us in the long run.
Yeah.
I think those are different versions of the same thing, but that's not that's a tributary of rebuilding, not necessarily the kind of linchpin. But in studio now with us, you know him, you love him, of The Athletic, NBA reporter Joe Vardon joins us. What's up, buddy?
You know, tanking happens in the NBA every now and then, too.
I think there was a team here around the town that might have done that once or twice. So just on that point of tanking, though, have you kind of seen that word, which I think is very definitive and specific, has kind of been morphed into more of like a broader term that maybe it doesn't apply to everything?
Absolutely. Yeah, first of all, players never tank. Mm-hmm. They are never involved in that. When they are playing for money in a violent sport like the NFL or even in the NBA, when they are on the floor, they're trying to win. They do not care about the future. That's one. The coaching staffs, they may care. They may participate in tanking. And the way that you would see it, at least in our sport with the NBA, is when you get into the fourth quarter and, you know, the coach is playing a lineup that's competitive and is keeping it close against a team like Cleveland that's very good. And then they pull those guys with 5 or 6 minutes left. That is a coach participating in tanking. The front office is ultimately the part of the organization that's going to decide this group isn't working or we need to get worse so we can get better. And that's when, you know, trades are made where it looks like they're trading away players they were counting on this year.
All right, Joe, I don't have too many pressing Cavs questions for you.
Okay.
There's just a couple. Obviously, everyone knows how good they are, how expected this season is supposed to go. We'll get to the postseason side of it in a second. I do want to ask you about Malik Beasley, though. Mm-hmm. It's the hot name over the previous 24 hours. Shams had the report out there that there was interest. If he does, in fact, get cleared, Malik Beasley to the Cavs. Make it make sense.
Well, I mean, from a fit standpoint, you have to think about Max Strus being out for months. You know, if he plays at all, it won't be until after the All-Star break. And so behind him, you know, there's DeAndre Hunter, who they're going to count on a ton. But they're pretty young. I mean, they're going to look at Jalen Tyson at getting some minutes. And so, you know, Beasley is a knockdown three-point shooter. He's been around forever. I think he would be a really good veteran presence in a vacuum. This idea about the NBA investigation into the gambling stuff, like, that's no small thing, and that is the reason that he's not on a team. So, yes, of course, the Cavs are interested. There are going to be other teams that are interested, too, and might even be able to pay a little bit more money than what the Cavs can offer. But just because Malik's agent is out there saying, he's been cleared, you know, by this group or by that group, like, the investigation is still ongoing, and he's not out of the woods yet.
Joe, I'm curious because at the end of the postseason, when the Cavs got bounced out by Indiana, there was that same message for a second year of we got to get tougher. We got to get, and in fairness, they did specify we got to get stronger in the gym, that kind of stuff. And then at Media Day this year, they were like, we don't need to get tougher. So I'm just curious. One, did you notice the change in messaging there? And is toughness still a debate for this Cavs team heading into year two of Kenny Atkinson?
Well, it has to be because of the way these postseasons keep ending. They either end with way too many players out with serious injury or with nagging injury. You know, people forget that Caris LeVert 2 years ago missed game five against Boston with a knee bruise. I mean, that was stunning. You know, that's just not something you see in New York or with Indianapolis or any of the teams that we consider to be tough. You know, obviously the series against the Pacers turned when in game two you didn't have Garland, Hunter, or Mobley in uniform, and they were all questionable coming into that game. So that suggests there was a chance they could play. Now, if we want to get into the semantics over, you know, were these guys actually questionable or was that some gamesmanship, fine. But the fact is, you know, the word toughness factors into that. I think after an off season, you know, a chance to let your pride heal, I could see the Cavs coming in and saying that that's not the issue. I'm not sure it's the issue either. You know, this is something that I've been saying. I've said it on your show a number of times. You know, my main concern with this team is just they have two smaller guards that they rely on in a playoff series, both very talented, great players. But NBA history tells you that it is really hard to win with two guards starting who are 6'3 or under. And that's what we have with Donovan and Darius. That's my main thing. Like, I feel like Jared Allen could be fine in the right playoff series. I think Evan Mobley is going to continue to get better. His arms are even bigger than they were a year ago. You know, so like I like this team. I like to downplay the toughness angle. But until they show that they can win with the two smaller guards playing together, I think that's the biggest question.
Yeah, how many years do we do this, though? You know, and I get it. Kobe constructed this team. He's going to fight for it more than anybody else. But how many years do we do this where you have two smalls and then two, obviously, with between Allen and Mobley, just two bigs? Like, it's between your front court and your back court, it doesn't make sense for a lot of people.
Well, Jonathan, that is the fundamental question going on in the NBA right now. Not just in Cleveland, but now it's being talked about in Orlando. It's being talked about in any city where the team has taken on a bunch of salaries to go and try and win. Because of the current salary rules in the NBA, it's genuinely believed right now that when you take on multiple max contracts, your window to compete with that particular team is a couple of years. The thinking goes that if after a couple of years you're spending all this money and you don't get there, that the restrictions on how you can change your roster based on how much you're paying your guys are too severe to keep that group together. So we're saying that if Cleveland doesn't win now, they're going to break this team up because of how expensive it is. But Dan Gilbert's a really rich guy. And if he wants to pay for this roster continually, he can. There's no rule that says that he can't. It's just that if you're going to keep this group together, it becomes even more difficult to make a trade around the edges to improve the group that you already have. So long way of saying, like, it might be this year where they've got to really get far in the playoffs or there's going to be a big move made.
Joe Vardon of The Athletic, live here in studio with us. So I know your most recent, or one of your most recent pieces on The Athletic was about this, but walk us through what Project B is.
Project B, and this is going to sound corny, Project B has kept me up at night because of what it actually represents. You know, I'm a huge golf fan. I think you guys know that. Certainly all the golf courses in Northeast Ohio know that, how I've spent my last couple months. So I'm really into the PGA Tour, really know a lot about, you know, the split with LIV Golf, which is where some of the stars left to start a new league, a new tour that was paid for by the public investment fund in Saudi Arabia. That same movement is either underway or is certainly like rustling, you know, in the shadows towards being underway. And that is what Project B is or was. It's a group of investors. Two of them are from Silicon Valley. They count the Saudis as a partner. And they went ahead and they tabbed Maverick Carter, who we all know as a fellow Northeast Ohioan and is one of the closest people on earth to LeBron James, as an advisor. And for the last year plus, they have been raising billions of dollars, although like raising is a little bit of a funny word when your partner is the Saudis. You don't need to raise money, but they've been going around, they've been securing investors, and they've been talking to players and talking to player agents about this idea of a second option to the NBA. That's LIV basketball. And that, you know, it's been a fear, I think, for any other pro league since the moment that LIV Golf was started. But like, that was something that appeared to be heading towards, fruition in the NBA as recently as a couple days ago.
Is this more, real quick, because we are up against it, is this more WNBA based right now with the NBA in the future, or is the NBA pretty intermediate right there too?
So, right. I mean, this is a much longer story. I think based on a few things that have happened in the last week or so, the talking point from Project B right now is they're trying to start a rival women's league. But if they are successful, and by successful, I mean, if they get a Caitlin Clark, if they get another massive WNBA superstar or a couple of them and pay them nine figures, trust me when I tell you that NBA players who are free agents in the summer of 2027, they're going to see that and they are going to be very interested.
Joe, always great stuff, man. Great to have you in studio here. Thank you so much for your time, bud.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been great.
Joe Vardon of The Athletic on the Fan Hotline. We will react to that and some of those comments there in the lead at 5. But we got Lindsay Rhodes of Sumer Sports coming up in 5 minutes. Did the Greg Newsom and Joe Flacco trade surprise her? And is this tanking? That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.